The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Two Chairs No Waiting, episode number 496, Fix-It Shop Talk number 2. Two Chairs No Waiting is brought to you each week by the folks over at WeaversDepartmentStore.com. Go over and check it out. You remember last week we talked about the Bullet we're going to be talking about this week? You can get issues of those. Before we tell you that, let's talk about the... It's wintertime coming. It's heading here, so get you a Floyd's Mayberry Barbershop sweatshirt. And if you want to get copies of the e-Bullet, like I was talking about just a second ago, they have vintage copies over there. You can go and get them. There's about 53 issues. You can go and order them. So head over to WeaversDepartmentStore.com and check it out. Two Chairs No Waiting is also brought to you by donations from listeners just like you. The executive producer of tonight's show is Bob and Pat Mundy. I guess the executive producers are Bob and Pat Mundy. Thank you, Bob and Pat, for supporting me here at Two Chairs No Waiting. If you'd like to do that, head over to Patreon and you can do it. Just head over to Two Chairs and you'll see the links. Go. Who am I? Why would you support me? I'm Alan Newsom. And it's always great to talk to you here in Mayberry and visit. And this is what you do on Mayberry, isn't it? You get on the front porch and you start talking to people. You start talking to your buddy that's sitting beside you. That's what I'm doing with you. I want to just have a good conversation. Us have a little bit of fun. Here's what's coming up tonight. We were going to be talking about Emmett's Fix-It Shop. Okay. We did an episode back. It was episode number 337 called Fix-It Shop. Talk, fix it shop. That's kind of hard to say for some reason. And that was back in July of 2015. And we're going to do a part two of this, number two. Now, Emmett's Fix It Shop, if you didn't know, was a part of the Bullet. Now, in the Bullet, they used the Fix It Shop as a forum for readers' questions. And because I was doing stuff on the Bullet last week, I wanted to do some this week. So we're going to go through some of that, and we're going to hear from Paul Mulick with a voicemail. We'll hear from him right away here in a sec, and then we'll hear from Randy Turner. Speaking of Paul Mulick, he had some feedback from a recent episode I did, and it was to correcting me, and he is correct in correcting me. Thank you, Paul. I do appreciate being corrected. So let's go and hear from Paul. Feedback from one of our trivia episodes we did just not long ago.
Hey, Alan, it's Paul Mulick calling again from Joplin, Missouri. I had a couple comments about your trivia quiz from a couple weeks ago, a little extra information, if you will. I do know the name of Opie's secret club, but I can't tell you. And in one of the questions, you said that Uncle Ollie had taught Andy to shoot a 45. Actually, it was a 22. But the other one, I shudder to think what you just revealed about yourself when you said that Floyd has only one son, because he has at least two. There's Norman that plays Little League Baseball. They talk about him and the Jinx. And then the son that plays the saxophone for Mr. Finch and those gossiping men is named Randall. If you listen real close, when Mr. Finch says those three tunes are very nice, Floyd says, "Do you hear that, Randall? That means a lot coming from a man like Mr. Finch." At least that's what it sounds like to me. So take a listen and see if you think maybe it sounds like something else. 10-4, over and out. Bye.
Bye. See you, Paul. Hey, thank you. Thank you for calling in and correcting. Now, he's talking about episode number 492 called Trivia Fun is what we did. And on those episodes, those were where those questions came from that he was talking about. And he is correct on all of that. Uncle Ollie taught him on a 22, not a 45. All that stuff's right. And I have to turn in my Floyd Lawson card, evidently, because Floyd the Barber, Let's hear this first. This is about Randall. First off, let's hear about his other son, and then we'll talk about Randall. So this is Floyd on the episode The Jinx, talking about his son Norman. So let's hear this real quick.
You know, I just have to remember something. It was the opening day at the Little League. You probably remember this too, honey.
What happened?
Well, a foul ball went in the stands, and Henry caught it and threw it back. Well, the very next batter comes up, he knocks a fly out to my son, and it goes right through his fingers.
Floyd, could that have happened because your boy ain't a very good ball player?
It was the only fly that my Norman dropped in the whole game.
It was the only fly that his boy Norman dropped.
I believe it was the only fly that come to your Norman in the whole game.
So there he was. It's the only fly my boy Norman dropped. So that's the one I always refer to for me when I'm talking about Floyd. If I'm talking about Floyd and my son, it's always my son Norman. And here's the reason. So the Paul was talking about on the episode, those gossiping men. That's what he's talking about, where Floyd says Randall. Now, he does say it, because if you listen about 100 times, you can pick it out. But let's hear this, because he talks about it, because he's in the, okay, where they are, they're in the hotel room. They're buying shoes from the traveling salesman. And let's hear what Floyd says to his son. And I think he says, Randall, you got to listen very closely. Really hard to hear, but let's hear it.
A little tune? No. Those three tunes were very nice.
I remember. That means a lot coming
that's
from
where
Randall.
He said it. Yeah. So that's where he said, you hear that, Randall? It's very, very hard to hear it. Let's see if we can hear it.
Mustn't forget those shoes.
Are you sure you don't want my son to give you another little tune?
Listen real close.
No. Those three tunes Floyd were very nice.
I remember. That means a lot coming from a man like Mr. Finch.
All right. So he says, you hear that, Randall? Like that. You hear that, Randall? He definitely did not say Norman. So he did not say Norman. He said, do you hear that, Randall? Like that. So Paul is correct. Floyd has either got two sons, or his one son has two names. Like when he was little, they used to call him, they called him Norman. And then when he got bigger, they called him Randall. So maybe that's what happened. I don't know. So somebody's calling me to tell me the answer right now. I do believe on the phone, if you could hear that in the background. So, all right, so there's Paul is right, and I definitely wanted to do it. And like Paul said, he knows the name, but he can't tell
me. Sam, guess where I've been?
Why, give up, where?
I can't tell you, but you know what I did? I joined a club.
Well, that's fine. What club was that?
I can't tell you.
You're kind of secret, ain't you?
Uh-huh. Know where we meet?
No, where?
I can't tell you. I got a job in the club, too.
You have?
Know what it is?
No, what?
I can't tell you.
Well, go on, why can't you tell us?
Well, I can't tell you why I can't tell you.
For heaven's sakes, why not?
Because something had happened to me.
What would happen to you?
I can't tell you. Well, so long. I just thought I'd come by and tell you.
So we appreciate Paul coming by and telling us what he couldn't tell us. So thank you, Paul. I do very much appreciate that. All right, so now let's go into, now, as I said, this is from Emmett's Fitzick Shop. This is from the Bullet, the actual newsletter of the Andy Griffith Show Rerun Watchers Club, okay? I'm going to get a little black background music from the BW Boys. And the first one we're going to do, this one is from the October the 3rd, 1995 issue of the E-Bullet. Now, I made a copy of that page, so I didn't have to drag it around. So I have it here in my hands because this one is interesting. Now, what this was is folks would write in to the Andy Griffith Show Rerun Watchers Club and ask questions. And Jim Clark would research the answer and come back and give feedback to the readers so they'll know this. So this one says, Dear Fix-It Shop, who played Mr. Swamp? And this was from Donnie Whitehead over in Greenwood, Mississippi. So Donnie got his answer in 1995. It's been a couple of years ago. Who was Mr. Swamp? Folks, you're going to find out right now that, well, here's the answer. Everybody wants to know the answer to this deceptively simple question. At one point, we thought we had found out when we discovered a photograph of an actor who looked like Mr. Swamp. We have at least discovered the correct spelling of the character's name as being Mr. Swamp, S-C-H-W-A-M-P, from writer Everett Greenbaum, who penned the first episode with the Quiet Nodder. It was in Mountain Wedding, episode number 94. But our cousin Virgil somehow misplaced the picture before we could make a positive identification. Now, that happened quite a while back, by the way. We believe the actor's name was on the back of the picture was Frank, or maybe Fred King. That's what they believe. You've never been able to determine it here. That incident was more than 10 years ago, though. So this was in 1985 when somebody ran across a picture that they believe was Mr. Swamp, but they can't find it again. And they believe it had the name Fred, or maybe it was Frank King on the back. Because Mr. Swamp never had a line to say, he was never listed in the episode's closing credits, and no one we've ever asked who was involved in the show can remember his name either, though they do remember him quite well. And so, for now, and still now in 2018, Mr. Swamp's identity remains a great unsolved mystery of the Andy Griffith Show. But far from sweeping this matter under the rug, so to speak, we continue our expedition in search of the most elusive Mayberry character since Old Sam. So there's our answer about Mr. Swamp. I hope that helps you. Here's the next question. Dear Fix-It Shop, I recently went on vacation in North Carolina, and on my way back home, we visited Mount Airy, and I had a great time visiting and seeing the sights. We really enjoyed having our pictures made with the squad car there in Mount Airy. This brings to mind a question. What happened to the original squad cars on the Andy Griffith Show? And what happened to the original sheriff and deputy uniforms? And this was from Brad in Milford, Ohio. Brad Council. So, Brad, here was the answer you were given back in October 1995. Well, once again, we don't have a complete answer. Ford Motor Company furnished the new squad cars every year, or at least every time there was a new model. But we've never found any conclusive record about whatever happened to any of the squad cars when they were returned. There have been more reports of authentic Mayberry squad cars than there ever were actual squad cars to begin with. But doing the next best thing to finding a squad car that actually was on the show, fans have constructed and maintained some of the best replicas of the Mayberry squad cars you can imagine. And you'll find them all over the country, including Mount Airy. And right in your Ohio backyard, Brad, is the annual Mayberry squad car rendezvous each year. This is back in 95, by the way. You guys have seen and heard reports from 1995 at the squad car rendezvous. It's held each summer at Wally Service Station in Bradford, Ohio, where there are half a dozen or more squad cars and their owners. They drop by for a bottle of pop. As for the sheriff and deputy's uniforms, Don Knotts says he no longer has his uniform, though he does still have his original salt and pepper suit. We don't recall Andy Griffith ever commenting on specifically what happened to his uniform. Whoever might have them ain't talking, at least not yet. But you can see one of Andy's Matlock suits on display at the Visitor Center, which is now the Andy Griffith Museum in Mount Airy, North Carolina. And if you go to Mount Airy, this is me adding it, you can also see the sheriff's badge that Andy wore, and they actually have a sheriff's uniform top that Andy wore as well that's got the badge on it. But it was from, I think, the Andy Griffith, the Mayberry reunion episodes. Let's continue with the answer from Emmett's. We're a little tighter on space than usual in this issue, but we'll have more room for Emmett's Fix Talk in the February issue. So that's what it says. So that was the end of the article. So that was from October 1995. So here's what I want to give us now, because this is this one. These some of these answers are coming from the July 12th, 1997, because I thought this was very, very interesting here. Okay, so here we go. Dear Fix-It Shop, at the risk of carrying Mayberry's trivial trivialities to the realm of the absurd, sir, that cannot happen, I'd like to put my two cents in regarding Johnny Koontz, who we've spotted in about 38 episodes. Now, we're going to stop here because this was back, as I said, in 97. Now, in 1997, we thought Johnny Koontz was the name of the man who turned out to be Andy Griffith's brother. Now, you guys have seen him. Let me pull that up. I can show on the video at least. Johnny Koontz is not his name. It is, I forgot his name. It's Andy. It's Danny Thomas's brother who played the man that you always saw on these episodes. And now I've completely forgotten his actual name, but I will find out in just a few minutes and report back. But anyway, he is the man who they call Johnny Koontz, and we'll talk back on that. Somebody in the chat room will pop in and tell me their name, because I've gone blank on myself. And let's see. So let's go on to the next one. I've been curious about one scene from Barney's Bloodhound. Okay. And Barney's Bloodhound, that's episode number 128. No matter how many times I see this episode, I can't figure out exactly what the words they're talking about are. Okay, so what they're saying to each other. Remember, Andy's sitting in the chair or outside, and Barney's in the chair. He's been kidnapped by the ladies there. And so I've been trying to figure out what they say outside the cabin window, what Andy's saying and what's Don saying. And this came from Mark from Fairlawn, Ohio. By the way, Tom Jacobs was his name. Thank you, Brisket, in the chat room. Here's the response about what they were saying in the window, because I thought this was very interesting, because you guys, I don't know if you remember, Barney's sitting there and he's going, what? What? Out the window. So here's what he did. The response is, what an interesting question, Mark. Emmett himself couldn't make a definitive answer. So he closed up the Fix-It Shop one afternoon and went over to visit Beverly and Bob Geldrich, who are experienced lip readers. So they're lip readers. They're going to read his lips. We watched the scene you described over and over and over. Some of the segments are really difficult to read because the camera angle and the fact that Barney's thin lips move so fast. That's funny. So this may not be precisely syllable for syllable what Barney and Andy say, but it's very close. So here we go. So Andy's outside the window and he goes, hey, Barn. Barney does a double take. As he spots Andy outside the window. Andy goes, of course, he's mouthing this. He goes, is that Neil? Because remember, Neil was laying on the couch with his back there. He was asleep. So Barney looks toward him and looks back at Andy. Andy says, is he asleep? I'll come in. And Barney goes, what? What? You remember this? Except it's all lips. He's only doing his lips. What? What? Andy says, I'll come in. I'll come in. And Barney goes, what do you want me to do? What do you want me to do? That part I can always see. Neil snores and Barney looks over at him and then back at Andy. Barney says, yes. Andy goes, no, 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 no. Listen, listen. I'll come in there. And Barney goes, I'll come out. Okay. Andy goes, I'll come in. Okay. Okay. Barney goes, I'll come out and you come in the back door. Andy goes, okay. Of course, the result of this confused mouthed conversation through the window is that Barney rushes out the front door as Andy rushes in the same door, leaving Andy with Neil. You know, it's just a good thing that Blue the dog wasn't ready to come to the rescue. Was ready to come to the rescue just a moments later. Special thanks to Beverly and Bob Geldrich and to Cindy Tinker for their assistance in this unusual question. So you guys have seen the episode we're talking about, right? Make sure you watch that and you'll see when it's going on. All right, so let's go to the next question here. All right. I have a trivia item for you. First, in Barney Gets His Man, that's episode number 30 of the Andy Griffith Show, Barney begins writing a littering ticket to the escaped crook, Eddie Brooks. Remember that. Brooks tries to escape and bumps into Barney, and in doing so, knocks the ticket book out of Barney's hand and across the top of the squad car. The next shot shows Barney and Brooke wrestling on the ground, and the ticket book is on the ground next to them. The shot moves away and comes back with the ticket book in Barney's hand while still wrestling with Brooke. That's a question, I guess, observation. And you know who did this one? Ron Blankenship from Florida. He was in our chat room. It's Emmett Clark from Emmett's Fix-It Shop, by the way. So, Ron, here is the answer you received back in July of 1997, because I know you're listening. It says, "You've got an eagle eye. Emmett and the Fix-It Shop loafers had never noticed this particular continuity blooper. It's always fun to discover new ones. One of the most famous ones is the way Barney's hair changes from all mussed up to well-combed in the preamble scene of Opie's Ill-Gotten Gain." That was in episode number 103. Another favorite blooper is in the change in the Treasury agents, the T-Men, you know, in the episode of Black Day for Mayberry. That was episode number 101. Rance Howard had to step in and replace one of the agents during the filming of this episode because the actor playing one of the agents became ill during the filming and was unable to continue. Now, we've talked about this before on previous episodes. Regular readers of Professor Brower's class column in the bullet will know that many of these small inconsistencies are the result of using one camera to shoot the master shots and then same camera to shoot the medium shots and then the close-up shots. So it's three shots. They shoot it three separate times. So that's why that happens. They stop filming to reposition the camera for filming the different angles of the scene sometime later. They may be even at an entirely different location and possibly days apart. In the case of going back and forth between the exterior and interiors of the buildings, for example, some of those scenes are like that. And it's bound to allow some small little inconsistencies to slip through. Trivia guru Paul Mulick, who we heard from earlier, is actually compiling a list of these sorts of inconsistencies on the Andy Griffith Show for future publication. Paul, did you ever do that? I'd like to see that. So see Floyd's Barbershop bulletin board for an address where you can send bloopers that you spot. Oh, I don't remember that. We need to do that. I need to set that back up if it's not set up. All right, let's go. How much time we got? One more. Dear Fix-It Shop, who's the other guitar player in Guitar Player, episode number 3? There is obviously another guitar player beside Jim's Lindsay, James Best, unless he has 10 fingers on each hand. Okay. This response is from the Fix-It Shop. Earl Hagen, remember Earl Hagen who wrote the theme song? Earl Hagen remembers the guitar player used was Herb Ellis, also known, a renowned Los Angeles session guitarist. Earl's recollection is from more than 30 years back and is supported by the fact that Herb Ellis is listed in the credits. Fans also enjoy noticing that the guitar sound is electric, but the guitar we see Jim Lindsay playing doesn't appear to be amplified in any way. The soundtrack, including the multiple guitar track, was actually dubbed separately in the sound studio. James Best likes to tell the story on himself that when he was asked by the Andy Griffith Show casting people whether he could play guitar, he emphatically responded, "I own a guitar." And the casting folks assumed that surely a man who owned a guitar could play a guitar. Wrong, 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 wrong. But James was perfect for the part and did a good job with the help of Herb Ellis and a lot of slick camera work of covering up his lack of guitar playing ability. All right, so folks, I got more, and we will cover some more of these later. These are awesome, but I hope you have enjoyed these reports from Emmett's Fix-It Shop. So this is, we'll do another one of these segments. I appreciate it. That's cool, wasn't it, getting here that we had a response from Emmett in our chat room, Ron Blankenship, and from Paul Mulick, who we heard from earlier. Wow, small world, isn't it? Small world. Well, all right, folks, now we have our report from Mayberry History from over with Randy Turner. So, Randy, take it away.
Welcome to This Week in Mayberry History, a report by special correspondent Randy Turner of the Gomer and Cooper Pyle Comic Book Literary Guild of the Mayberry Historical Society.
Paul Henning is best known as the man behind the Beverly Hillbillies, Petticoat Junction, and Green Acres. But one of his last television writing credits before those shows was on The Andy Griffith Show. Paul was born on September the 16th, 1911, in Independence, Missouri, where he grew up on a farm. Like most early television writers, Paul first wrote for old-time radio, writing for series such as Fibber McGee and Molly and the George Burns and Gracie Allen Show. His first television work was as a producer for a 1951 television musical program featuring Italian opera singer Ezio Pinza. He then produced a new show that was added to alternate weekly with Pinza's show, another musical program that starred Dennis Day, best known as one of the supporting players in the Jack Benny program on radio. In 1953, Paul began writing regularly for the TV version of one of the shows he had written for in radio, the George Burns and Gracie Allen Show. After writing and producing for several projects, he created his first series, The Bob Cummings Show, which was later called Love That Bob in syndication. Cummings played Bob Collins, a Hollywood photographer and ladies' man. Part of the storyline involved his young secretary, who he called Schultzy, who pined for him and sometimes intentionally sabotaged his dating plans with other women. Schultzy was played by Ann Davis, who 2 decades later would be better known as Alice, the housekeeper of the Brady Bunch. As a bit of non-Mayberry trivia that I just can't resist adding, when Stan Lee created the character of Iron Man, he created a similar character to Schultzy to serve as Stark's secretary, Pepper Potts. Pepper was even originally drawn with brown hair styled like Schultzy's, but 5 issues later, the decision was made that she resembled the TV character too much, so her hair was changed to red in a different style. In 1961, Paul wrote the episode Crime Free Mayberry for The Andy Griffith Show, in which 2 criminals posed as an FBI representative and a press photographer in Mayberry to give awards to Andy and Barney for the town's low crime rate. That same year, a Rock Hudson and Doris Day film co-written by Paul titled Lover Come Back earned him an Academy Award nomination. In 1962, Paul created the incredibly successful series, The Beverly Hillbillies. The series ran for 274 episodes until it was canceled in the same rural purge by CBS that ended Mayberry RFD. The cast included Nancy Culp as Secretary Miss Hathaway, a similar character to one she had sometimes played in Paul's first series, The Bob Cummings Show. CBS was so pleased, they asked him to create another series the following year, which he did. Petticoat Junction was also immensely successful. 2 years later, CBS made the unusual move to greenlight any pilot Paul wanted to make. He didn't have time to develop a third series, but he had Jay Summers, a colleague and regular writer for Petticoat Junction, develop a TV version of Jay's old-time radio program, Granby's Green Acres, which Paul produced as Green Acres. By the way, in the radio version, Eb, the farmhand, was played by Parley Bear, Mayberry's own Mayor Stoner. The storekeeper, Mr. Kimball, was played by Howard McNear, in the first episode of the radio series, though Howard did not continue the role. Paul's rural shows contained far broader humor than that found in the Mayberry series, but they all ended when CBS decided to change their programming away from rural-themed shows in spite of the series' popularity. Paul's best-known work afterward was co-writing the 1988 film Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. Paul passed away in 2005 at the age of 93. Well, that's it for this week. Thanks for listening. And remember to take Andy's advice and go out there and act like somebody.
Wow. Thank you, Randy, for that great report. If you want to make sure you don't miss any of Randy's stuff he's doing related to Mayberry on the web, send him an email at turnersgrade@gmail.com. turnersgrade@gmail.com. And don't miss any of his stuff. Thank you so much for doing all that, Randy. That was absolutely amazing. Folks, I'm tell you what, if you're still sticking around here, I think I'm going to give you one more little bit from Emmett's Fix-It Shop. Here's the question. I have a couple of questions. First, it seems that after Gomer enlisted in the Marines, he came back to appear in several episodes. What gives? Second, some members of our chapter, if it's charity, we want no part of it because we aim to hang on to our position in the community. That's their chapter. They seem to think that in Rafe Hollister Sings, Rafe responds to Andy. Here's what they think. They think he says H-E-L-L. I think he says, well, Andy, that's me. Well, that's what I think he says, because that's me. And when Andy pretends to be trying to figure out what he had been arrested for back then, is that true? And this came from Paul from Jeffersontown, Kentucky. Here's the response. The reason that Gomer appears to come back to Mayberry shortly after joining the Marine Corps is that the Andy Griffith Show episode entitled Gomer Pyle, USMC, was the 107th episode filmed, but it was the 127th one broadcast. The episode was filmed early in the 1963-64 season in order to sell the network and the sponsors on the concept of a Gomer Pyle USMC television series for the 1964 and 65 season. The episode was the last Andy Griffith Show episode broadcast in 1963-64. Most of the classic Gomer episodes of the Andy Griffith Show were actually filmed after Gomer Pyle USMC, the pilot. The reason Gomer seems to come back to Mayberry is that the filming order, as opposed to the broadcast order, is often used in rerun by syndication of the Andy Griffith Show. By the way, that's why the Andy Griffith Show Rerun Watchers Club always uses the filming order when numbering episodes. As for your Rafe Hollister questions, yes, that is the line we've always understood Rafe to say. That is said with great charm and innocence, and it fits Rafe's character so perfectly that for years it slipped by. I mean, not so as you could notice. That is, until the proliferation of reruns on the BCR. Well, I don't think he says H-E-L-L. I think he says W-E-L-L. Well, Andy, that's me. That's what I think he says, because that's how I got through the censors. Anyway, folks, that is our show. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I hope you enjoyed those little trivial trivialities that we were able to come up with. I want to thank Jim Clark for the e-bullet. If you want to get a copy of the book, not the e-bullet, the bullet, the actual paper versions of these things, you can get printed versions of them from over at Weavers, as I mentioned at the beginning. You might want to head over to Weavers and check it out. You can get about 53 issues of the bullet. They're not all available, but they're coming from about 1982 to 2001. You'll also get issues of the Pocket, which was the follow-on to the bullet, the paper version. It was a little smaller newsletter. And then, the e-bullet took its place. So you had the bullet, the pocket, and there was also the button in there somewhere. So I'm not sure if you actually get issues of the button or not, but yes, you do. So there's at least 30 episodes of the bullet and at least 30 issues of the two successor newsletters, the pocket and the button. You can get those, and it's only $40. You get them all. And I forgot how many pages this is. It says somewhere in here. But it's a lot of pages, like 400 pages of reading, and along with the rare photos. So head over to Weavers and click on the link there on the side that says the e-bullet newsletter, vintage printed editions, and you'll be good to go. All right. So that's my sales pitch. Folks, I want to thank you for being here. It's always so much fun to be here with you. You know, we've got a lot of fans and friends out there that are just like us that watch and listen to the Andy Griffith Show. And man, it is so good to be able to spend time with you and talk about it on the front porch or wherever you're listening to me. Folks, I'd love to hear from you, just like I heard from Paul. So you can give me a call at 888-684-8415 or drop by twochairsnowaiting.com. Click the contact button and they'll give you all the information and ways to get in touch with me. Have a great Mayberry week. Get ready for Mayberry Days. It's just around the corner. Got one episode of this podcast left before Mayberry Days. Woo! I'm ready to go, so I hope you are. We'll see you there, hopefully, and we'll see you right here next week on Two Chairs No Waiting. Have a great week.